Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
This is Patriots Playbook.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Patriots Playbook, breaking down last Sunday's game.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because okay. The backers are going to fast read over the top.
Next Sunday's game.
Want to go odd. 5.
Patriots Playbook.
51 mirror.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
And some of the fun stuff in between.
Even. 51 grapes. Even. 51 grapes.
And now... He's John Rook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Patriots Playbook for Wednesday right here on Patriots.com Radio. John Rook with you, and certainly we're welcome to bring back into the fold Mike Parenti from PFW once again. Mike, what's happening today? Anything good?
Not too much today, John. We had a little bit of a quiet locker room. A couple of players not there. No Matt Castle today. He will speak tomorrow. No Rodney Harrison, so we were without our go-to guys today. So we had nothing else to talk about. We just sat around and talked for 20 minutes. No, I had a little Stephen Gostkowski interview. So,
well, you know what? That's actually a pretty good interview subject because
I agree.
Lost in all of the, you know, the controversy, if you will, and the story surrounding Brady and everything else about this football team, Stephen Gostkowski has, I think, put himself right at the top of the list, perhaps in the entire NFL amongst kickers.
Yeah, and he's been the most consistent player on the team through 3 weeks. He's kicked all his field goals. He's been fantastic on touchbacks, and he's really helped the return coverage game limit what the opposing team can do. So the battle of field position, at the very least, has been won. Other areas, obviously, there are some problems that we're going to talk about today, I'm sure. So there are some other issues to get into. But Gostkowski's been one of the lone bright spots right now through 3 weeks.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I, you know, you can't get over the fact that his booming kicks against the Jets, giving them great field position situations, was a major factor in winning a couple of games.
Oh,
he
was super. That might have been one of the best games by a kicker I've seen in a long time.
A long time, yeah.
He was fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely.
5 touchbacks, hits all 4 of his field goals. I mean, he dominated that game. And that was kind of the perfect blueprint when you think about it. Just keep the Jets from getting any returns. They started every drive from their own 20-yard line, pretty much. And it's hard. I don't care if you have Brett Favre back there. It's hard to go 80 yards every time and score.
What do you think about, his, so far, not being able to step in and kick what we could consider, a real pressure kick? I mean, does he still, I mean, are you of the opinion that he could do that if given the opportunity?
I think so. He had a big kick in a playoff game in San Diego a few years ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember him kicking some big ones. And I think when you think about it, they all are big to some degree. Because you go back to the Jet game, you only win that game by a certain amount of points. Now, granted, I felt they dominated that game, but the final point differential was not reflective on the scoreboard, and he kicks all 4 of his field goals. So if he misses one and just shanks one in the first quarter, it could come back and haunt you. So I think they all are big. Now, for him personally, he has not been in a position where he's had to make a big field goal in a playoff game like an Adam Vinatieri. But I thought the San Diego kick back in, I think it was 05. Right. In San Diego, and they shocked the Chargers, was a pretty big kick for a young player at the time.
It was.
And I thought, was it 05 now? No, this is his third year, isn't it?
So yes, he wouldn't third even, year.
So it had to be 06. I'm confused. My years are all crossing
okay,
together. But
believe me.
I'm sure you know what game I'm talking
about. They all run
about.
Together.
Yeah, they kind of do, obviously. And I'm only 29, so I can't even remember yet. So, but he has had it in the past. And I think one of the glaring things we thought last year in the Super Bowl was why wouldn't they kick that field goal on that fourth and long? And we all know what play we're talking about. When they went for it, and they chucked it into the end zone, and it didn't work out. And some people thought that was a sign that maybe they didn't have confidence in Gostkowski. It can depends on how you look at it. I'm not quite sure what to make of that play still. But I think they do have tremendous confidence in him, and I don't think that's the issue right now.
No, it is definitely
certainly
not
with the way he's kicked. That confidence is not running short for Stephen Gostkowski.
Well, I think it's kind of interesting to note that, last year I recall during the bye week, there were a lot of different things going on. The team was in the midst of a huge winning streak.
Mm-hmm.
There was still a lot of buzz. And now the bye week, as we've stated a few times already, it comes at a good time for this team because it gives them a chance. First of all, I think it gives them a chance to sit and stew for a week based on what happened last Sunday. It will also allow potentially, another bumps and bruises, but maybe more to heal, but maybe more so wounded psyche to heal up just a little bit. So it comes as a good time, but it's been dead, right? In more ways than just being quiet. I think with this football team right now, and I find the whole thing just bizarre simply because of the buzz that this team has created for itself and because of itself over the last several years.
Well, the one good thing about the bye week now is they're playing an opponent in 2 weeks that they haven't seen a lot of. Mm-hmm. So they could use the extra time to kind of get up to speed on San Francisco. And plus, like you said, to kind of do some self-evaluating. And I think you have to find ways to balance both. You got to do a little bit of both. At some point in the beginning of this week, and as we get toward the end of the week, it's going to be a lot of self-scouting. And then maybe starting over the weekend, they'll get into their San Francisco preparation, whereas they would normally be going through a walkthrough process for the game coming up. So instead, they can get a leg up, get a couple of extra days to get ready for the 49ers. Now, I don't think the 49ers are a great team. I think they're a team on the rise to some degree. They're 2-1 right now. They're playing pretty good football. JT O'Sullivan has done a nice job at quarterback. Frank Gore came off a big game last weekend. This could be a tough game in their own backyard. So I think the Pats are going to need that extra time to prepare. And luckily, with the 2 weeks off, they have it.
Well, there are so many different things that we're going to get into today, not the least of which would be, you know, certainly things with the Patriots. But I think the one thing that, you know, as I, you know, done my you know, dutiful homework, I guess, around several of my favorite websites and media outlets and such, just to see what people are buzzing about this football team. And I came across something I think you'll find kind of interesting, Mike, because I know you kind of compile some of this stuff for Patriots.com when you do the news blitz every day. And I came across this item from ESPN that actually took, I think it was a half a dozen different instances of individual teams in the NFL and asked fans in their Sports Nation poll, asked fans to vote panic or patience with these six particular teams. Did you see that by any chance?
No.
Okay.
It's on ESPN.com?
It was on ESPN.com. I had to search for it a little bit.
Read it to me. I'll take a look while you...
Yeah, I had to search for it a little bit, and I actually don't have it up right now. I just have a couple of notes written down. But the one thing that I wanted to do here today, though, to start out the program, is offer to our listeners webradio at patriots.com. Also, the telephone number, 508-543-7482. Very simple question today in terms of our question of the day. Do you preach patience or do you push the panic button? Well, the Patriots are concerned after 3 weeks. And tell me why you vote the way you do. Panic or patience with the New England Patriots? Now, you know, you can obviously go on and, you know, if you're able to find the survey, because like I said, it wasn't readily
accessible. Easier said than done, right?
Yeah, and figure out, you know, which way Sports Nation's voting right now. But I have the numbers as of about a half an hour ago that I'll share in a little bit. But I'd just be curious to know, right off the top of your head, what you think. What's your initial gut reaction, you know, considering everything that we've gone through 3 weeks, and it's been considerable. Is it time to push the panic button, or do you preach patience here where the Patriots are concerned?
No, I preach patience, John, because you're working with a quarterback with limited experience, and he has to get the reps, he has to get the time in this system in actual NFL games before we can fully judge his capability in this offense. We need a little bit more than two starts and more than half a game. We're going to need to see a little bit more of that before we fully understand what we have in Matt Castle. Now, there have been some ebbs and flows, which I would expect from a player with no experience like him. You saw what happened in the Chiefs game. I thought he played well. I thought he was fantastic against the Jets. And me, personally, I thought he was terrible Sunday against Miami. Now, keep in mind, he's not the reason they lost the game, but he is one of the many players who underperformed that afternoon. He was not very good at all. So you are seeing peaks and valleys. I say patience because he's only had two starts, and it's the third week of the season. I can't push the panic button in week three, unless, number one, the team is 0-3. Because at that point, it's almost nearly statistically impossible to get to a Super Bowl and win one at 0-3. I don't know if anyone's ever done it. I know a few teams have done it at 0-2. The Giants did it last year at 0-2. Mm-hmm. But not a lot of teams can start 0-3 and then win the Super Bowl. So that's something that weighs on your shoulders if you were 0-3. Number two, if you have some devastating injury at that point, that changes the course of the season. Well, we got that in week one. So now we have a new quarterback in there because we don't have Tom Brady. So that has changed things. But, again, that was week one. Now we're 2 weeks later. It's now week four coming up. It's a bye week. You have to expect some patience with Castle. The biggest concern I would have is the defense getting pushed around like it did on Sunday. That's a concern because we saw that in the preseason, and we pretty much blamed it on vanilla coverage and vanilla play calling. Right. Well, it wasn't vanilla on Sunday. It was just bad. It was flat-out bad. And that has to change. And if that doesn't change in 2 more weeks, 3 more weeks, yeah, now you're going to get that panic button out.
Sounds to me, though, like, you know, you could at least make a case for pushing the panic button now where at least the defense is concerned. I do tend to agree in terms of the preaching patience where Matt Cassel's concerned, although yesterday here on the program, I came up with a couple of things that I thought that would inject some life into this team a little bit. I thought that maybe this team was ready to have a little energy, a little emotion, just a little something, if you will, injected into it. And I thought a couple of the ways you could do it. Number one, cut somebody. Plain and simple, just cut somebody. Take somebody in that's established, that hasn't been getting the job done in that clubhouse, a veteran presence in particular, and say, that's it, you're done, thank you very much. Or I've been an advocate for giving Jeff Garcia a look, especially if you can get him for nothing. And I thought that it would be just enough to shake things up and just to get guys thinking differently or maybe looking over their shoulders, because you just want to make sure that complacency doesn't set in. Because, frankly, I'm at such a loss for words for Sunday's game, and I'm not even sure I can really call it a game, event, let's say. I'm at such a loss for words that I thought that maybe what was starting to set in a little bit was complacency. Because if Joey Porter opening his mouth can't get the Patriots' emotions running a little bit, what can?
Well, I mean, that stuff only goes so far, John. I mean, at the end of the day, if Miami's out there running its spread offense and your defense can't cover over the middle, I don't care what Joey Porter's saying or how fired up you are. Now, I don't know if I'd go out and just flat out cut somebody just to make a point. I would bring people in if I think they're going to help the team win. If I think somebody needs to be pushed, I don't think Matt Cassel really needs to be pushed by having Jeff Garcia come in and just take a few snaps and try out. I don't think there's any complacency on his part. See, I would do that with a player if he's dogging it. If somebody's not giving me 100%, then I may bring in a couple of guys or put some feelers out and say, hey, you know what? You can be replaced tomorrow. We could sign this guy. You could be out here tomorrow on the unemployment line again. But that's not the case with Cassel. He's out there trying hard. There's no doubt about that. He's trying to make the plays. He just does not have the experience, and maybe he doesn't have the talent as Tom Brady does. I think we can all establish that. And Tom Brady is a 2-time Super Bowl MVP. To say that somebody is not as talented as him is not an insult.
No, absolutely not. But here's what I thought about Cassel, and you're right. He hasn't done poorly. But it seems to me that, and again, just based on my observations of him in the first couple of weeks here, it seems to me that he's checking off and he's throwing the safety route. And I don't know if that's by design, if the coaches are insisting that he be a little bit more conservative, or if Matt's just afraid to pull the trigger on, shall we say, a deeper route. And I think that's something that has to happen for this team. He's got to play with a little bit more of that swashbuckling, hey, let's, you know, pin our ears back and go type of attitude, because this team's offense is predicated on that kind of philosophy.
Well, I have a couple of ways of looking at that. I think part of the problem is teams are trying to take Randy Moss out of the game now. And the reason they're going to do it with Matt Cassel is because there's a greater chance of Matt Cassel maybe trying to force something in a double coverage than there would be Tom Brady. But as we've seen through a couple of weeks, Matt Cassel is willing to take the check down receiver and throw to somebody else who is open. On the flip side, they're not getting much protection up front. Cassel was pressured all day on Sunday, did not have time to drop back and pass. Mm-hmm. There's no way you can run a 25, 30-yard slant if you don't have more than 3 seconds to throw the ball. So that's part of the problem, too. You're just going to have to take what the defense gives you at times.
Right.
Though I thought, and again, I always say it's a combination of things, not to sound too much like Bill, but I think there were some plays in that game on Sunday where they weren't even trying to go deep. I agree with you 100% on that. Every now and then you got to take a chance. You have to try something, bring in an extra tight end to block, try to get some extra protection up front, but do something to air it out. And I thought last week was the perfect opportunity against a defense that entered the league ranked dead last against the pass.
That's where that's the thing that I keep coming back to that I'm still shaking my head about, you know, 3 days after the fact, is that, you know, Miami's defense was so poorly rated, especially the secondary, and the Patriots just could not find a way to take advantage of that, and I'm still trying to figure out how the heck that happened. And by the way, you brought up a good point, and I had a couple of emailers suggest here on the show yesterday that how come it seems like the offensive line is getting off here when nobody's ever said they should get off, and frankly, I think the offensive line misses some of the athleticism and maybe the toughness of Stephen Neal.
I agree. It helps particularly on screen plays because you really need athletic offensive linemen to execute a great screen and have guys who can get up the field and throw some blocks. But at the end of the day, it comes down to protecting the quarterback, and if you're going to take chances deep, you need more than 2 or 3 seconds to throw. Now, I don't know if the line's getting off too easily here, because there are a lot of people who are still pretty ticked off over the Super Bowl and how the line played on that day, because that's an offensive line, John, that sent 3 players to the Pro Bowl.
Didn't
and they
play,
entered that Super Bowl.
Like
no, and they did not like play like it in the biggest game of the season. No. And that does not sit well with a lot of people and probably does not sit well with them as a unit either.
Well, again, I guess it bears watching. But like I said, I think that they're still struggling to find some continuity. And I think we all know that the offensive line is the one part on this football team, one unit on this team, on any team really that plays football, that needs to have a little chemistry and a little continuity amongst it. And when you don't have that, it becomes more and more difficult to be effective offensively.
And it's not just Billy Yates having to replace Neal. I don't think Mankins has played particularly well.
No, I thought Mankins got overpowered in a couple of instances.
Yeah, and the tackles have been so-so at this point in the season. It's just a combined team effort. You really have to see where it's going to go forward now because Yates has been there for a couple of weeks, and I think he's done okay. There have been some plays on screens where he has done a real nice job, and Belichick has praised him for that. But over the course of maybe another 4 or 5 weeks, I think when you overexpose certain players, you get hurt. There are certain players who fit roles perfectly, and when you try to extend them beyond that, it only comes back to bite you. I think like Jabbar Gaffney is another one where he's a good number four receiver, maybe out there for 5 or 6 big plays a game, but not as a number three, maybe taking a third of the passes from a guy like a Matt Castle or anybody for that matter. So I think when you overexpose certain players, it does hurt you eventually at some point.
Yeah, that's true. I think it probably could. So, you know, the offensive line has got to be an issue. I think that, tight end, we haven't had a healthy Benjamin Watson, at least until this last week. And I guess even some doubts as to whether or not he was completely healthy there. And David Thomas missed all of last year. And so when you think about it and you try to, you know, almost go man to man on this particular item on this agenda of what's wrong with this football team, you can kind of see where the, you know, lacking consistency, if not outstanding performance, or this team could be, you know, and maybe some reasons behind why this team is failing to hit on all cylinders.
Hey, we have some power rankings, by the way, John. Did I know you're big on the power rankings.
Only because I hate to, only because I like to pan them. That's
well, we got an email from our friend Strippers who sent us Vic Carucci's weekly rankings from NFL.com.
Right.
Number one is Dallas.
Yep.
Number two, the New York Giants.
Mm-hmm.
Number three, Philadelphia at 2-1. And he highlights number four and asks if we agree with this, the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, I saw that. That was on which one was that? Did you say it was?
This is Vic Carucci from NFL.com.
Yeah, Carucci's NFL.com. Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Patriots, by the way, not in the top 12.
No, and they weren't in the top 12 last week.
Right, so they're not going to get there now after getting blown out.
Right. You kept them in the middle of the pack this week, which frankly was a little bit of a surprise to me.
Yeah, I was surprised last week. Now, if you want to put them in the middle of the pack, that's fine.
Yeah, I would think so. I thought they were a top 12 team a week ago. I don't know if they are now. Based on just a 3-week snapshot, I would certainly, you know, tend to agree with that. I'm not seeing it where Buffalo's concerned. I mean, I realize that the Bills are 3-0. I realize that the Bills have got improved defensive numbers overall. I don't think they've allowed yet 300 yards total offense in the game to any of their opponents yet. So, you know, I think it's all, you know, clicking in the right direction. They're at least effective enough on offense, but are they the fourth best team in the NFL?
Well,
I based on what, really?
There are only 5 undefeated teams, John. Dallas, New York, Buffalo, Tennessee, and Denver. Now, I think Denver is the most fraudulent of all 5. I mean,
well,
they have been lucky
Denver's
to
all
win.
And, yeah, no
their
D in
defense
Denver.
Is terrible. They've been the beneficiaries of 2 very fortuitous calls.
Mm-hmm.
So they could very easily be 1-2, and until they stop somebody, that's not going to last. That's the 0-2 Patriots right there. The 2002 Patriots also started 3-0. They were scoring points by the boatful but could not stop anybody, and it came back to bite them. They finished 9-7 and missed the playoffs. Now, I think Denver is a fraud team. Tennessee is doing it with all defense. How much longer can Kerry Collins carry him? Now, Kerry Collins is a serviceable backup. I don't know if that defense is going to be good enough down the stretch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, I probably put Buffalo in the top 4 right now. Trent Edwards has done a nice job, particularly down the stretch in games where, and Paul mentioned this on PFW in Progress yesterday, he's shown a little bit of that moxie, you know, in the fourth quarter, rising
well,
to the
occasion.
Well,
he did definitely against Oakland. I'll give you that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'll
17 fourth quarter points to win that game. I mean, that's when you really want to see. That's what we need to see here from Matt Castle. If you get into a game like that, can Matt Castle rally you back from a 10-point fourth quarter deficit, just for example? Could he do that? Well, we're seeing it now with Trent Edwards. And I always agreed with Philly being a much better team than the record shows at 2-1. I mean, they overwhelmed Pittsburgh. They destroyed.
That was a pretty
Ben
solid
Roethlisberger.
Defensive effort. Yeah,
that was a great defensive effort.
Yeah.
The only poor defensive effort they have had was against Dallas, and Dallas is just scoring a ton of points. So it's hard to argue between. You know, you could argue between Dallas and New York. Giants were iffy against the Bengals, but pulled it out in the end. I thought that game was a little bit of a letdown. I didn't think they looked quite as crisp as they did the week before, and a team that's not very good either in Cincinnati. So. Yeah, who else are you going to put in the top four over Buffalo? Would you put Tennessee out there? Would you put Green Bay? Green Bay at 2-1, or now Pittsburgh with Roethlisberger? We don't know what his future is going to be. Carolina?
I don't think so.
See, and maybe you could take a hot team, and I use hot proverbially because it's the third week. But Washington has won two in a row. They're 2-1 now. Jason Campbell's playing some good ball. You know, maybe Washington goes a little bit higher up the power rankings too. See, it can be based on trends. If you see a team moving in the right direction, you may tend to put them higher. Even if a team has the record but is maybe losing a couple of games, then you tend to kind of be down on them a little bit. Like Green Bay just getting beat by Dallas and Pittsburgh just getting beat up by Philly. They dropped significantly. Green Bay went from 3rd to 7th, Pittsburgh from 6th to 8th.
Yeah, that's what, you know, again, I try not to get too caught up in how much a team moves up or down week to week, because I think, well, I realize it's, you know, it's pure conjecture here. But at the same time, though, it's interesting to see trends, and it's interesting to see what others who are well thought of in this particular business think of you and other teams. And I kind of tend to feel like, at least early in the season, teams up at the top get a little bit overrated. Not in all cases, because right now I think the Dallas Cowboys probably are the best overall team in the NFL, but Dallas has still got some work to do defensively. There is not a complete team in the league at all right now. Everybody still has some work to do, some obviously more so than others. But I'm just, you know, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you put Buffalo in a position where they would be in the top four or five, because there's only five undefeated teams overall? They haven't been beaten yet, and if it's just a three-week snapshot we're talking about, then they probably deserve to be there. But to me, you know, from what I've seen, the clips that I've seen of the Bills, I've actually tried to watch a little bit of their stuff on NFL Network this week just so I could get a better sense of maybe what the Patriots are actually going to go up against this year. I see a team that seems a little tighter and a little bit more disciplined, and I see a team that maybe knows what they need to do and what is expected of them by Dick Geron, but I don't see a whole lot of flash, and I certainly don't see too many personnel groupings that are vastly different than what we saw a year ago.
Right, and I just think when you go back to power rankings, you want to start with the undefeated teams, and then you take the next best and you see if anybody can crack that group among the undefeated, if there's somebody who is better than the record suggests.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you do it. And that's why Philly is third to some people. That's why Philly is so high. Because a lot of people think Philly is a very good football team, and you know, I'm not particularly on that bandwagon.
It's hard to argue, I guess, based on what we've seen them on the field. And I think the perception is, I think a lot of times when you have a quarterback who surpasses the game, if you will,
mm-hmm.
and Donovan McNabb has kind of returned to form just a little bit, I think that has a tendency to overinflate your overall value.
Yeah, I would agree with that, too. It's certainly star potential more so than performance.
Right. Yeah, I would agree with that. Mike Parenti with us here inside the playbook today as we roll along on a Wednesday. Don't forget, webradio@patriots.com, the email address, our question of the day, panic or patience? Which button are you pushing for the Patriots? And tell us why you say panic or patience where the Patriots are concerned after 3 weeks going into the bye week. That's number one. Number two, there's a ton of other NFL news today, and we'd be remiss if we didn't get, you know, jump on a little bit of this, because a lot of it's very interesting, not the least of which the fact is that somehow, some way, somebody got smart in Detroit and decided to let go of Matt McMillan, because the team president and CEO of the Lions is finally gone, and to me that's probably the lead story in the entire league for at least today anyway.
Yeah, we were talking about that on the previous show. Just how did this take so long with so many botched draft picks and just failures over the years?
He had signed an extension in 2005 through 2010. So, I mean, he still was good for, what, a couple of more years after this one.
Yeah.
And I guess based on what I've been able to read, it's unclear as to whether he was fired or if he was asked to resign, but at least he's out.
He may be reassigned to some other role in the organization, too.
Right. And there's already some conjecture that he could end up somewhere else in the NFL, perhaps with a team out on the West Coast and all kinds of things going on.
They'll make him a coach.
Yeah. I wonder, though, why now? And I don't know what you guys talked about earlier today, but why now as opposed to earlier when this team was an NFL worst 31-84 since he became GM in 2001?
Yeah, I don't know like what broke the camel's back here. Because I mean, hadn't somebody seen the same thing for the last 3 or 4 years?
Yeah, I know. Now the vice chairman Bill Ford, I think it is, mm-hmm. with the Lions, had come out publicly a couple of days ago and says, "Hey, if I had the authority, I'd fire the guy."
Yeah.
But hadn't everybody said that in Detroit?
That's the thing. So I don't understand. See, he probably said that knowing a move was going to be made and something was in the works, so he's able to at least with some degree of certainty say, "Yeah, I'd fire him too." So, you know, it works out from that perspective. But I just don't get after so many losing seasons. And so much in the books, 31-84 during that stretch is phenomenal.
No, that's just, yeah.
That is, and how many wide receivers did they draft over the years? And, yeah, a couple of those guys worked out, but, I mean, you take enough. I mean, at some point, some of them have to stick. You draft six linemen in 6 years, one or two have to be good.
Well, you'd think.
And he missed badly on some others.
Well, I'll tell you
and
what,
they never drafted to build defense.
No.
Which is a problem because they can't stop anybody. They've never stopped anybody from scoring. When was the last great or even very good
Detroit
Lions defense?
Which is actually very, very odd because he was obviously a Super Bowl champ as a linebacker.
Yeah, which makes no sense. You'd think he would go after a couple of linebackers with first-round picks.
Right.
I don't get it. But that's certainly been on the NFL radar all afternoon.
Yeah, that's a big story. I think that maybe the best moves he made as a GM of the Lions were probably drafting guys like Roy Williams and Calvin Johnson.
Yeah, those two guys are made.
Yeah,
they're very
as good as anybody
players.
In the NFL.
But there were so many failures in between that it just the negatives far outweigh the positives.
Well, the one lost record is what outweighs everything else, and so I guess he's finally done, and maybe the Lions fans now are starting to breathe a little bit of relief. The other bit of news today that's coming out of the NFL that's certainly hitting the headlines is the fact that the Giants have suspended Plaxico Burress for a game for an undisclosed violation of team rules. We've heard that phrase before. The Giants have a bye this weekend, as do the Patriots, of course. So it means that he's going to miss a game the following week against Seattle. I just saw on ESPN where they interviewed Drew Rosenhaus, who is Burris' agent, and they're going to appeal the suspension. They're going to try to take it to an arbitrator and have him in uniform.
Next question.
For the October 5 game against Seattle. So here we go again.
What's the point? He didn't answer his phone. He didn't return phone calls. That's on him. That's all on him. If it's a miscommunication and a misunderstanding, oh, I thought we didn't have meetings today, answer your phone.
Get back to somebody.
According
to Rosenhaus, he said that he had a family matter to attend to.
Well,
that's what he says.
You go to the team and ask them for permission to leave.
Well, you would think so.
There's no way around that. There's no way that if he had a family emergency and he didn't tell them first or at least ask, then that's his problem. I don't, you know, that's very disappointing. You know, you expect
team
a
rules
bit
are
more.
Team rules.
Exactly.
Yeah, and you know that Tom Coughlin. I mean, my goodness. I mean,
he isn't go-fetch.
I can't imagine him bending on this one at all.
No, but to some degree they have already bent because it was a 2-game suspension and one of those weeks includes the bye. So you know, he'll get hit with two. He'll lose two game checks, but I'm pretty sure he will. I could be wrong on this, so if I am wrong, somebody correct me. But I think he loses two game checks and just misses one game.
Well,
I think.
You know what?
See, it says all in the report, it says he's suspended for 2 weeks, but will miss the October 5th game following the team's bye. So my guess is that he has to give back two game checks, no?
Maybe.
But and to any degree, it's disappointing. He came off a great postseason, caught the winning touchdown in the Super Bowl, signs a multi-year extension, doesn't participate much in camp, talked about having to make business decisions. He was a bit of a distraction, and he had played well so far, and now this happens. and things were going well. They're 3-0, and they've played good football. It's just an unnecessary distraction at this point.
It's great to have him in there, but the Giants have some pretty good depth at wide receiver. So
they do.
I'm not sure they could get by for
1 week. It's not going to kill them.
Yeah.
But it sets a bad precedent if he is not showing up to meetings as one of the leaders in the team.
Well, that's not good. That's obviously true. I think it's kind of interesting. It kind of leads me back, and we'll get to some of the other moves that were made in the NFL, but I bring it up only sort of in juxtapose it against the some of the stuff that you actually put on Patriots.com today in the News Blitz.
Yes.
About one of the stories that came in, I guess it was the Herald, correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm thinking about three different stories at once here, where the Herald asked the media and the fans to lay off a Randy Moss.
Yes, yes.
And I thought that was an interesting piece, number one. And I understand why people and why fans might be on Moss and think that, you know, he could perform an about-face just given his previous performances and his personality, at least the personality we're led to believe that he has. What are your thoughts on that? And is it possible that he could pull a Plexico Burris and just decide to up and leave at some point in time?
I would say based on his past, there's always a chance that he could get disgruntled and frustrated with the lack of progress of the offense and the fact that he is not getting the ball. I'm not willing to go there yet because he has said all the right things after games, during the week leading up to games, or anytime he has talked to the media, he has said all the right things. He has been supportive of his teammate. He hasn't done anything different on the sidelines than he was doing in the past, to me. That's just to me. I have not seen anything that would lead me to believe that he is right now a ticking time bomb. Now, that could change. He could walk off the field in 2 weeks after having Castle fire a ball over his head, and he could go back and slam his helmet or kick the bench or do something or get into one of those T.O. Donovan McNabb shouting matches up and down the sideline. Something like that would have to happen for me, or he would have to say something a little bit off-key for me to believe that things are starting to revert back to form. But I haven't seen anything yet, John. I have not seen anything yet. I think he's been fine. Yes, he's probably frustrated that he's not getting the ball. I'm sure Matt Castle is frustrated that he cannot get him the ball. And I'm sure the coaching staff is frustrated because he's a big-time weapon.
Karen Garigian wrote the article in the Herald, and it was based on the television broadcast. Solomon Wilcox was down on the sideline for CBS, and he called Randy Moss out for a particular play. It was a third down ball, and he didn't extend his arms to make a catch. And so she, this being Karen, the Herald reporter, called Solomon Wilcox basically to ask about that and get his thoughts on Moss. And Wilcox just said he thought he could have fought harder for the ball on that particular throw. But for the most part, he thought that Randy Moss was into the game, and he wasn't necessarily frustrated with double coverage.
Yeah.
And he doesn't necessarily think that Moss is going to become disinterested if, you know, this season all of a sudden goes, you know, in a downward spiral.
I mean, he was fine last week after they won the game, and he didn't catch any more passes that week than he did this past Sunday. And he was fine. From by all accounts, he was joking, he was laughing, he was in a good mood. They won the football game. That was fine.
What do you make of, you know, his numbers comparison with this time a year ago? Is that all on Brady and or Matt Castle, or is this also partly because of the way the offense is trying to operate right now? I mean, he's 10 catches behind where he was this time a year ago.
And about four touchdowns as
well. Four touchdowns as well, right.
I think part of it is the fact that he does not have the best quarterback in football throwing to him right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the other part is teams are going after Castle, and he's not getting time to throw. They have to, at some point with Castle, adjust what they do offensively. They cannot ask him to make all the same plays as Tom Brady, because even Bill Belichick has said this in the past, and not necessarily just talking about this situation in particular, but talking about quarterback play in general, or even any position for that matter. Some players are more comfortable with certain plays than others. You know, everybody has their strengths, and I don't think Castle's strength is his accuracy deep downfield.
Mm-hmm.
Very good throwing arm. But from an accuracy standpoint, I think he is a bit lacking. I think that's where Tom Brady really excels. You could also make the argument about decision-making. Maybe they don't want to take as many chances because they're afraid that he's going to make a poor decision deep down the field and kick away a drive.
Yep.
And those are all concerns. And that has all added up to this point now. Randy Moss has become a Monty Toomer to me. He's become a guy who's running 7 yard outs and stepping out of bounds. They cannot get him the ball in any other fashion. And that's going to be that has to be frustrating for anybody in any position. It's really a combination of forces that have kind of held him down so far this season, and it's not going to change until they start getting better protection up front or until Castle becomes a little bit more familiar with his receiver and a little bit more comfortable in the pocket.
Do you sense that something is building up here, though? Because I'm kind of led to believe that something is. And I don't know if it's
not
just
yet.
Frustration.
I don't see it yet. Again, I mean, he's talking to the media, number one, which, mm-hmm. you know, would be a positive sign, because if you don't want to
I think he's talking to the media because of the demand for it, and I think the team has asked him to, but you know as well as I do that Randy Moss, he can shut it down.
Yeah.
He has in the past.
Right, and he hasn't yet, so that's my point, is that there's mm-hmm. always been demand for him, and he doesn't always talk that much, but he's been out there talking. I think he's taken a vocal leadership role in that regard. He has almost, in a sense, taken some of the responsibility off other players who have to answer questions in the locker room by going to that podium on game days after Sunday. And that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But until I see something or an off-color remark or something that I can read into, I haven't gone that far yet. I don't see it yet. Like I said, there's potential, no question. And if he doesn't like that sort of speculation, well, that's on him because he made his bed with his behavior at times in Minnesota and Oakland.
Absolutely.
So he has nobody to blame but himself for his reputation. You create your own reputation in life or in sports or any degree.
By the way,
so he has to deal with that.
Somewhat coincidentally, the Patriots did fill their last roster spot with Maurice Price.
Yeah.
A wide receiver who had been with Kansas City, which I thought incredibly odd, especially in the fact that Brandon Merriweather went down, and we surmised yesterday that maybe a guy like John Lynch could be on his way in, but Patriots did not go that route.
Well, Merriweather looks fine. He's been out there today. He's been out there in practice, from my understanding, so I don't think there's really any long-term lingering effects there.
That's good to know. They can breathe a sigh
of relief in the secondary. Mm-hmm. At receiver right now, Kelly Washington's banged up, and he's a big-time performer on special teams. Not so much on offense, though he's gotten involved in a couple of plays. I think Price is a guy who could come in and play on offense. By talking to him today, and some of the guys in the locker room were there talking to him, doesn't seem like he's much of a special teamer anymore. So I don't know if he'd really have a role. He's a tall guy, so it's hard in the return game. He's not going to be a speedster like Anellis Hobbs.
Well, he's not overly tall. He's only, what, about 6'1"?
Well, by the receiver standards here, that's gargantuan, you know what I mean? So, I mean, Moss being the tallest guy, and he's the rare exception there. So I think he's a guy that could be out there on a few plays if you don't have Kelly Washington. Beyond Gaffney, who do you have? You know, you don't have a four. You're using your running backs and your tight ends. Mm-hmm. You need at least maybe one more vertical threat, and maybe Price could be that guy. But, again, he may not even be here after the bye. Who knows? I mean, a lot of these guys come and go. We don't see or hear much from them in the future anyway. So this could be a short-term thing just to kind of see and get a feeler out there for what he's all about.
Right. All right. What did you think of the of Mike Reese's article when he asked several people around the NFL what they thought of the Patriots' start after 3 weeks? And were you able to take any useful information out of it?
Yeah, I like the part about dictating the tempo. I think that's a big sticking point. I think when you can come out like last year's team could and drop 21 points in the first quarter on somebody, you have now dictated the tempo of the game. You have taken the other team's offense and made it one-dimensional because they can't run the football anymore. You have made life easier for your defense. Everything really has a trickle-down effect from there. So I think when you can dictate the tempo, which they have not done yet this season, that's a big thing. So now we see how they perform in close games or games where they're trailing in the fourth quarter or where it's neck and neck and maybe you're exchanging touchdowns. And it's a little bit different when the other team has its entire playbook at its disposal because you haven't made them one-dimensional. So, you know, that's the biggest thing I took from it. Everything else I kind of agree with and already really thought of, you know, particularly with whether they are, I don't want to say dumbing it down, but giving Castle fewer plays, trying to simplify things. I mean, those are all good talking points, too. But the fact about dictating the tempo, I think, is a very important thing in this game.
How about the the tempo certainly is important, and I think that's the one thing the Patriots we knew that were very consistent with when things were going well over the last couple of years is they could always dictate to the other team how to play the game, whether it was going to be a run first or a pass first, or if it was going to be a no huddle type of thing, or they were going to get into a kicking battle, more field position battle, whatever it may be. The Patriots were always the first team to strike the first blow, and now obviously they're being dictated too. That is a major shift that probably, until we started talking about it here, probably hasn't been that apparent to a lot of people, especially a lot of fans.
No, you watch the offense now these days, it seems like they're running the same four or five plays. There really isn't much diversity right now because they're not throwing deep, they don't feel they can throw deep, and they haven't been able to do so because Randy Moss has been taken out of the game plan by a lot of other teams. So instead of coming out and thinking, oh boy, we got to line up in dime package coverage to open the game and put, you know, six D-backs on the field and try to do something, well, now you come back and run the football and carve them up that way. No, now everybody knows what you're trying to do. You're going to try to run those screens. And I thought the Dolphins did a great job sniffing out the screen pass on Sunday. It wasn't like we saw with the Jets, who had no answer for it. One, because they were getting blocked out of the plays, and two, because they couldn't tackle. In this case, the Dolphins weren't getting blocked out of plays. They were right there on the ball. They were flying to the ball incredibly well on defense on Sunday. And they made those plays. I can't think of maybe more than one or two screens that really worked on Sunday. Nothing like, I mean, the first play from scrimmage in the Jet game, Kevin Falk ended up with like a 20-plus yard gain on a screen.
Right.
But we didn't see anything like that on Sunday.
No, we didn't.
So if teams start to figure out what they're trying to do offensively, Now you have a problem. Now, last year, there was, to some degree, a little bit of repetitiveness, too, because they kept throwing the ball and scoring a ton of points. But when you do that as often as they do, teams start preparing for that, and now you can hit them with the running game. Problem is now, if teams are preparing for the run in 2008, can they throw deep to beat them? I don't know. We haven't seen it yet.
The gadget plays were somewhat bothersome, and we spent obviously a lot of time over the last couple of days talking about that. And the fact is that, you know, until the Patriots recognize it, number one, and step up to do something about it, number two, there's a very good chance that they'll see those plays again at some point in time on down the line. Maybe not next week, maybe not the week after, but somewhere somebody's going to take a look at that and say, let's kind of put this in the hopper for when we play this team. And I think that the ease in which that they were performed and they were executed was most startling about it.
Yeah, well, what I think we would see more of is teams lining up four wide, five wide with an empty backfield and trying to spread out the defense, because that's what's leaving the middle of the field open. Now, I don't know if we're going to see a lot of direct snaps to the – or I should say just snaps to a wide receiver lining up at quarterback, because I don't know if a lot of teams have that much diversity among their personnel. It remains to be seen. But the problem that I have is falling for it five times and not making an adjustment maybe after the second time, which is very unpatriot-like under the Bill Belichick regime. More often than not, they figure something out at some point in a game. Here's what this team is doing. Here's where this player is lining up. Here's where they're switching this player to. And by not being able to do that on Sunday, I was alarmed by that. That was the worst thing about it to me, is that they never figured it out. And guys were confused. And guys after the game said, Richard Seymour said we were like chickens with our heads cut off. I mean, when have you ever heard them say that?
Never. In fact, we heard a couple of different players say that.
Yeah, and that is very alarming. I just... You know, it remains to be seen if they end up getting fooled by somebody's trickery in the future, or if somebody tries to emulate what the Dolphins did. I don't know if that will work so much, but I do expect to see a lot of teams try to tinker with some of their plays now and, you know, maybe try to catch them napping again. Because if they're not going to adjust to it, then I keep doing it, just like the Dolphins did.
Right. Interesting story today about teams and kind of bringing us back full circle to we started talking about the Buffalo Bills, and the Buffalo being one of the 5-3-0 teams. And I saw this article earlier today on the fact that there are, you know, even though this was written by Larry Wiseman of USA Today. I don't know if you saw the article. Talking about how, at least mathematically speaking, if you are 3-0 to start the season, that you're almost assured of the postseason, which, again, directly reflects on the Patriots because the Buffalo Bills are one of those teams.
Right.
Since the NFL expanded the postseason format in 1990 to the current 12 teams, since then, 93 teams have won their first three games, and 72 of them resulted in playoff berths. So that's a success ratio of better than 77%.
Wow, I was not aware it was that much at 3-0.
Yeah,
because I've seen a lot of teams have some pretty horrific second half collapses over the years.
Well, we've seen a couple in the last few years, but to me, you know, that's an eye opener again in light of the fact that the Bills are one of those teams, and that the Bills are so highly thought of right now, and that maybe we're still coming to grips with the fact that maybe Buffalo is actually improved over what we saw a year ago, and it's hard for us to really, get a true grasp of it because the Patriots have just absolutely dominated the series with Buffalo over the last several years.
That's going to be a hell of a game. I'm really looking forward to where both teams are in the standings at that point and how far along they are. When Buffalo and New England play for the first time, is going to be a lot of fun. Now, I'm also looking forward to Buffalo this weekend to see if they can go to 4-0. I will firmly start to believe a little bit more if they can get to 4-0, because they've had some good starts before, but not 4-0. That's not going back to the Jim Kelly days, perhaps, or when Wade Phillips was there, you know, or Rob Johnson and Doug Flutie. Mm-hmm. So it's been a long time for Buffalo since they've been this good. You know, I need another week. I hate to be wishy-washy about it, but I really need to see one more week. Give me the entire month of September, and I'll gauge them, and I will try to form a little bit more of an opinion on that, because right now I'm still undecided on Buffalo. Because like I said, I feel like I've seen this before. And I read this script with this great young defense that flies to the ball. And, yeah.
Hey, listen, Mike. I'm right there with you on this one. Okay, I don't think I don't think you're going to have to convince too many Patriots fans that the jury's still out on Buffalo. I just thought the entire article here, and again, you don't usually get a whole lot of really insightful stuff on USA Today. It's always more
right.
of a, it's always more of a little snapshot type thing, which I understand. They don't have the space to do a lot of in-depth stuff. But I thought Larry's article was actually quite good. Let me give you a couple of for instances for those that might not have seen the article earlier today. For instance, you called earlier in our conversation, you called the Denver Broncos a fraud at 3-0, right?
Yes.
Okay. They're 3-0 for the 10th time in franchise history. But twice before this year, they have started 3-0 and failed to qualify for the playoffs.
So they're one of those rare teams.
So maybe they're one of those. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, could
be. I think they could be there again, too.
In fact, they were one of six teams that won their first three games. Get this now. This is what I find is a tremendous statistical anomaly for those that really get into the numbers here. The Broncos were one of six teams that won their first three games in 2002. All six of those teams missed the playoffs in 02.
Yeah, Patriots are one of them.
Yeah. That's right. In 2002, this is really, I thought this was really interesting. It made me say, wow. You know, I'm like, I guess I didn't really realize that all of these teams started 3-0 in 2002. Carolina, Denver, Miami, New England, New Orleans, and San Diego. All six teams started 3-0. The best records were Denver, Miami, New England, and New Orleans all finished 9-7.
That was a weird year because the AFC East was a three-way tie.
Yeah, bizarre year.
3-9-7 teams, and the Jets won it on a tiebreaker.
That's right. The Patriots lost it on a tiebreaker.
Yes,
right.
The Jets came here on, I want to say, the next to last weekend and beat New England.
It was the last weekend.
No. The Dolphins were here the last week.
Okay. The Jets. Yeah, the Jets.
The Dolphins pissed away their playoff hopes by blowing a big fourth-quarter lead in the season finale. And so both teams were out of it, and all the Jets had to do was beat Green Bay, and the Jets killed Green Bay. And that knocked the Patriots out. Mm-hmm. So I think the Patriots knocked out the Dolphins that year, if I remember correctly, in the last week. And then the Jets knocked out the Patriots.
Jets the week before, basically, is what it played.
Yeah, well, they had to win.
They had to hope that the Jets lost.
Or the 4-5 game, whatever it was. They had the late afternoon or the night game.
That's correct.
And they just destroyed Green Bay at home.
Right.
And that's how it worked out. So that was a strange – you know, that could be one of those years, though, John, because look at the AFC right now. I mean, who is really good at this point, you know? I mean, San Diego's now, what, 1-2?
Right. I think that's why, you know, you're absolutely right.
Colts,
I think you're touching on something that I think is going to be key to the remainder of this season, Mike, and the fact that this entire season for the AFC is going to be one where you can throw caution to the wind. Just throw up a bunch of teams into the breeze and see which one lands first. That may be your best bet to get out of this conference.
You know, Fred talked about it, too, on our show yesterday. So he thinks this is the year that the NFC has reestablished its dominance.
I don't disagree with that.
That has now taken over. Top teams in the NFC now, he believes, are firmly. And Philly and Pittsburgh may be a very good example of one of those games from this past Sunday. The way Philadelphia beat up on Pittsburgh.
And Pittsburgh was a team that a week ago everybody thought was probably the best in the AFC.
Absolutely. So, and you could see a season in the AFC East, rather, where a 9-7 team wins the division. Wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility.
Well, again, I will go back to 2 weeks ago when we first started talking about what could the Patriots do without Tom Brady, and I said I still think that 10-6 is eminently possible, and I think 10-6 is eminently doable to win the division. And I think if you could give the Patriots 10-6 right now, would you take it? If you could tell me that they would be a division champ at 10-6, absolutely.
I would think I would take 10-6 either way right now, because I think there are some concerns from Sunday. And I think the biggest thing, and I'm not being one of the people pushing the panic button, but the thing is, you can't look at this schedule, this supposed easy schedule anymore, and start chalking off wins here. Because if Miami can come here and do what they did, who's to say they can't go to San Fran and lose? Or go to Seattle and lose?
Sure.
There really are no more gimmies. If they had just beaten the pants off Miami on Sunday, then you'd say, okay, you know what? They still beat up the teams they're supposed to beat.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're not so sure. Now we have to wait it out a little bit. Right now at 2-1, I'd probably take 10-6 if you could guarantee me 10-6. I'd take that, and I'd see where that gets me. That may get me a wild card. in the AFC this year.
You know,
I could.
I don't know. I think the AFC East teams are going to beat each other up.
Because I don't know who's going to go 12. Who's going to go 12-4 or 13-3? Denver is not going to.
I don't think anybody in the AFC is going to go 13-3.
No.
I think 12-4, maybe.
You may get a top seed this year with 12-4.
That's
where
right.
In years past you'd be 15-1 and get a 2, or 14-2 and get a number 2.
Well, that's what's happened the last couple of years.
So that, I mean, think about that. That's a sign of things on the decline a bit.
Yeah.
Or if you want to look at it for the glass half full perspective, you say it's just more parity. You know, however you want to look at it.
I think there's a combination. Number one, I think I'd be saying this even if, you know, the Patriots weren't in the situation with Brady, because I think we saw, to be honest with you, Mike, I think we saw, even though, you know, what we thought we saw maybe was just vanilla this and vanilla that during the exhibition season. But frankly, what I saw in the preseason was something beyond that. I saw the Patriots worried more about personnel groupings and not so much about, you know, execution on the field. And I saw that come up and bite them in the rear end, especially magnified now with the fact that their general, their field general Tom Brady is not around to call the signals, and they needed that. I've also seen other teams game plan specifically for how do we improve ourselves to the point where we can be competitive with New England. And this goes beyond just the teams within the East Division. I mean, Denver is a great example here. I mean, I've read about it the last several weeks in the Denver newspapers, how offensively speaking, Denver has basically stolen pages out of the Patriots playbook. And I use the term loosely. They didn't steal anything.
No,
I don't want to create
spygate
again here. No, but what they've done is they've taken the same ideology behind what the Patriots have done on offense and applied it, and look at what they're doing with the guy who they're extremely excited about and is very Tom Brady-like at this stage of his career in Jay Cutler.
Well, that's the NFL for you. It's a copycat league.
Exactly.
If something works, everybody else is going to do it.
That's exactly right. Teams are now, after 3 or 4 years of watching the Patriots basically dominate them within the AFC, teams are finally catching on, and they're emulating the Patriots. They're trying to figure out, all right, if they can do this, how can we pull that off, what they're doing, or something like that. Denver's a great example, and look at the offensive numbers that the Broncos are reeling up. Other teams are catching up. So this means the Patriots have taken a step back. Other teams have taken a step up. What do you have? You have basically anybody can win. You've got parity, yes, and you've got fans, and you've got players, and you've got front office people, teams around the entire AFC who are really excited right now, thinking of the possibilities that they could be in the mix this year after basically getting beat down by the Patriots over the last several years. That is what we currently have boiling over in the AFC, whereas in the NFC, they're going through the whole caste system, and right now, Cowboys are at the top of the heap.
I think our pal Andy in Vermont, who emailed us, would agree with that sentiment, because he says he is not pushing the panic button.
Okay.
He says, only one bad game, I mentioned it last week before the Finn game, is the screen and dunk game. Not going deep. If a defense could stop that, it may be trouble, unless Castle goes deep and we all know he can throw it long.
Right.
But I think it's reluctant on the coaching staff side to do it, being safe. And yes, his deep throws may not be as accurate as Brady's, but you've got to try it more than twice a game. I agree. I think they got to take some shots, and maybe we'll see that finally in 2 weeks at San Francisco against their defense, which I think is a pretty decent defense. They've got some good players. Certainly Patrick Willis is one of the standouts, and he had that big 86-yard interception return for a touchdown in week 2. Might have been against Carolina. I forget now.
Yeah,
but bottom line is, you know, they've got some good players out there on defense, but maybe you can lure them in a bit and you take a couple of shots, catch somebody off guard, because you haven't done it all year. So when you finally do it, it's going to catch somebody by surprise, because they haven't really tried to air it out yet.
The Dolphins have caught everybody by surprise, and maybe,
sure.
maybe you know what they certainly caught the Patriots by surprise on Sunday. But I read a couple of good things about the Dolphins this week in the aftermath, where this has sort of been building. You know, the Dolphins probably were not as bad as their opening two losses would indicate. Certainly not as bad as getting pounded at Arizona 31-10. I think that lulled everybody into a false sense of security that, oh, yeah, same old Miami.
Same old Dolphins.
Didn't happen that way. And so maybe Miami's a little bit closer to being better with, you know, young offensive line, Chad Pennington, who still got, you know, some pop, you know, back there at quarterback. Ronnie Brown looks to be fully recovered, by my estimation, from knee injury. Ricky Williams is remotivated. You've got, you know, proven but young and maybe improving wide receivers and tight ends. You know, defensively, Joey Porter's playing from the weak side. Perhaps now, you know, maybe he's kind of, you know, kick-started or rejuvenated his career. There's a lot of different things going for them right now. And Mike, before we kind of wrap up the opening hour here, yep. I wanted to get your thoughts on some of the articles that have also come out in the last day or so about Brett Favre and the Jets. And how that some are beginning to believe this is leading to a failed experiment with him as quarterback in New York. Can you make anything out of it yet? And what do you think about the particular story there?
Well, right now it doesn't look good, obviously. He has not looked like he has developed any sort of rhythm with his receivers yet. There's been some protection breakdowns, and we saw that against New England a couple of weeks ago as well. Now, some may say he needs to just get into the system a little bit more and maybe give him 5 or 6 weeks to figure it out. And I would say the same would go for a Chad Pennington, you know, and maybe Sunday was the game where he finally put it all together after a couple of subpar weeks, too. I mean, he came out of the game against Arizona for Chad Henne, and it was maybe 2.5 to 3 hours of some quarterback controversy there where maybe somebody thought that Pennington might not be the guy, and then we see him go 17 for 20 Sunday here at Gillette Stadium. So I think Favre needs some more time. I wouldn't call it a failed experiment just yet, but right now, certainly, they better be grading on a curve because it's not working out yet. They're not running the ball particularly well, and defensively, they just got torched. It's a similar situation to what Castle had to go through, I think, Sunday against Miami. Now, granted, Favre made a few more mistakes in that game that probably led to the deficit that they faced, but again, when you're facing that kind of deficit and it's 49 to 28, or whatever the score might have been, he's going to be kind of limited. So I got to see a couple more weeks. But you get into October and you're still having those problems, yeah, then it's a failure.
You know, I said this, I think, a day or two ago, and I want to repeat it here now because I think it kind of fits along the same lines. But frankly, I think, you know, number one, it's more of a byproduct of the fact that the Jets team just isn't good enough built up around Brett Favre.
That may be true.
I don't think Favre is necessarily struggling with the playbook. I don't buy that. Favre is as savvy a veteran as there may ever be in NFL history at quarterback. I don't think quarterbacks generally have a hard time picking up the playbook, you know, when they're in their 20th year or whatever it may be in their league. I think it's the fact is that he doesn't have the personnel groupings around him that he had in Green Bay. I think that's the biggest problem that he's having.
Yeah, I agree. The talent is not the same. I mean, I like Lavernius Coles and Jericho Cotchery, but, you know, from an offensive line standpoint and a running game standpoint, clearly the talent is not the same as what he had last year in Green Bay.
That's it. That's it for me. Hey,
that's it for me, too.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate you sitting in
again. No problem, thank John. You. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Good stuff. All right. That's Mike Parenti, of course, from Patriots Football Weekly, joining us as he does each and every Wednesday here inside the Playbook. Stick around, though. We get another hour of the program to go today. And don't forget our email question of the day. Panic or patience, which button are you pushing for the New England Patriots? And tell me why. And if you're not ready to push the panic button, that's fine. But give me a reason why you're not ready to push the panic button. And if you are ready to push the panic button, tell me how you'd fix it. Webradio@patriots.com. There's your email address. All one word, webradio@patriots.com. Telephone lines open and available as well, 508-543-7482. We'll get some emails in, got other news and notes to share with you from around the NFL and this bye week Wednesday. And in the next hour, right here inside the Playbook.
Patriot Place, New England's first and only super regional lifestyle and entertainment center, is now open right next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts. The home of the New England Patriots and the New England Revolution is now the home of New England's most exciting entertainment and shopping destination, featuring Circuit City, Bed Bath & Beyond, Christmas tree shops, Off-Broadway shoes, Staples, and New England's first Bass Pro Shops. Patriot Place has something for your shopping needs. And coming soon to Patriot Place is the first CBS Scene Restaurant and Bar, a four-star hotel, showcase live entertainment venue, and a long-awaited hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Patriot Place will soon be the home to more than 70 shopping, entertainment, and dining experiences unlike any other in New England. Visit patriots-place.com for more information. And enter the grand opening sweepstakes for the opportunity to win a $10,000 Visa gift card for a Patriot Place shopping spree. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day. At Patriot Place, everyone wins.
This is former quarterback Steve Grogan.
And former linebacker Steve Nelson.
We want to tell you about the game with the greats.
Are you one of those old diehard fans who remembers our playing days? like the 1985 Super Bowl or the snowplow kick.
Maybe you just want to meet the newest members of the Patriot Hall of Fame, like Ben Coates or my good friend Stanley Morgan.
And Andre Tippett, one of my linebacking brothers. He'll be there, too.
You think he'll bring his gold jacket with him?
I hope so. I can't wait to see it on him.
If you're a big-time fan, you won't want to miss the Game with the Greats. It's happening on October 5th at Gillette Stadium when the current Patriots are away at San Francisco.
Get your tickets now at patriots.com/alumni.
Hey, that's pretty good, huh, Steve?
Yeah, we still got it. We should call ESPN. We could be the next Mike and Mike.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers, mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
But we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation. Party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on third and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Welcome back inside the playbook, hour number two for this Wednesday, bye week Wednesday here on Patriots.com radio. John Rook here with you. Thanks again to Mike Perretti from Patriots Football Weekly, who sat in the opening hour of the program, as he does and will do each and every Wednesday here on the program throughout the course of this football season. you know, there is news being made. It's not necessarily all Patriots news being made, even though it's a bye week. Of course, the team dials it down a bit and cuts it back a notch or two during the bye week in an effort to take advantage of not having to play a game this weekend. As I'm sure many of you are aware, that is generally what happens when you have your week off. And then after your week off, in this particular instance, because this is the first scheduled week upcoming for bye weeks in the NFL. Turns out, of course, the Houston Texans and Cincinnati Bengals had a bye week a couple of weeks ago because of Hurricane Ike. But this was the first scheduled bye week of the season in the NFL this year. And the Patriots had the very first one. In the last several years, they've had the bye week toward the middle of the season, right around week anywhere from week 7 to 10. It didn't quite work out this way, but when you look at it from an entire season perspective, and when you look at it basically from, you know, when the preseason and training camp started, they've been going for roughly 9-10 weeks now, and after this week is over, they'll still have 13 weeks of regular season play to come. Well, then you can see that it's actually closer to the technical middle part of the year than you might be led to believe. Just a matter of conjecture here, and I guess a matter of instance. But the fact is that you know, the Patriots, this is what the schedule calls for. Randy Moss mentioned a little bit after the game against Miami on Sunday that, you know, if it were up to him, he'd be out there playing again because it's just in his nature to want to try to correct things quickly. And you know what? I'm kind of that way too. I understand how he feels, because when you throw a stinker up like that, and when I know that I make a big mistake, and obviously we all do from time to time as broadcasters and radio hosts and things like that. It happens. You want to get back on the air. You want to get right back at it and correct the problem, or at least move on so you put the mistake in the past. And I understand how athletes are like that. I do. I get that. I think the overwhelming majority of guys would rather just get right back out there on the field and whack somebody upside of the head and see if they can't correct things. Even though maybe, just maybe, it's probably in the best interest to sort of, all right, dial it down a notch, step back just a little bit here, and let's consider where we've come from and where we may be going from here on out. Let's see if we can try to fix the correctable mistakes and not, you know, make the same types of mistakes over again. This is what you can do with a week off. And so that's what this team will be doing. They've broken down the film. They've looked at the videotape. They've, you know, gone through and graded a lot of stuff. I'm sure the guys have had some chances to get on themselves and get on each other about what happened on the field against Miami. It was an utter, abysmal disaster. And I've heard a lot of different adjectives about what happened on Sunday, and they're all appropriate. So there's really not much else to say or to do with it, except to just, you know, learn from it. Don't forget about it completely, because, you know, if you do, you know, when you ignore history, then it tends to repeat itself. I'm sure you've heard a similar, you know, cliche in the past. And I don't think the Patriots need to ignore what happened, but I do think they need to forget the bad and try to take some of the good. And that is, of course, from a learning perspective, and start applying that right now. And perhaps start applying that toward their preparations for the next opponent, which will be a week from this Sunday, and at San Francisco, playing an improved 49ers team, which, of course, we'll jump all over next week as we get into game week mode here again. And we'll explore a little bit more closely and figure out whether or not the 49ers are indeed as improved as everybody thinks that they may be, since they're off to a 2-1 start. So it'll be interesting to see how that all unfolds. So this team will spend some time now just regrouping and learning and taking some time off, and whether or not it's you know, healing, or whether or not it's you know, being with family, or, you know, just, you know, chilling out, trying to decompress from, you know, the frustrations that we've seen over the course of the last couple of weeks here, especially with the key injuries that have transpired. We've sort of taken the point of view here in this program that we wanted to take a look around at other things around the NFL that could either directly or indirectly affect the Patriots. And in this hour of the program, we're going to hear from some of the guys in the locker room who are in there today. Sammy Morris, Heath Evans, Logan Mankins, and Adalys Thomas. We all caught up with Inside the Locker Room today to get their thoughts on the bye week and to get their thoughts on where things stand right now after three game weeks and a 2-1 record for the Patriots. So we'll give you a chance to let you hear their thoughts coming up here in just a couple of moments here. In the meantime, though, we're continuing with our question of the day, webradio@patriots.com is the email address, of course, and whether or not you are ready to panic or not, or the Patriots' concern. What button are you pushing? You pushing the panic button or are you preaching patience? Panic or patience is the question today. Panic or patience? And why? If you're ready to push the panic button, if you don't like what you've seen, and Mike Perini and I spent a lot of the opening hour of the program today, if you're just joining us, a lot of the opening hour today talking about what we think is real and what is perceived and whether or not we should be panicking or not. Over some perceived areas of need or improvement within the Patriot football team. But if you're ready to push the panic button, great. Tell me why. If you're not ready to push the panic button, that's fine too, but tell me why. There's a fine line, I think, in this particular instance. I got to admit, my initial reaction, and if you listen to the program over the last week and a half or so, and I've advocated for, you know, the Patriots to go out and make a bold move, in particular, you know, go out and maybe sign a Jeff Garcia, if you will, to kind of, you know, kickstart some things, that could be perceived as a panic button measure. But there's another part of me that thinks, you know what? No, I don't think so, because when I listen to the analysts, you know, on ESPN and Fox and some of the other places that I'm listening to them on. And one overriding factor keeps coming up. And I believe I mentioned this in yesterday's program here, but the one overriding thing that keeps coming up is age with the Patriots concern. Oh, they're old. They can't move. They can't get up and down. You know, they're not mobile. And I just like, I'm like, have these guys even stopped to watch this football team? Now, I will grant you, they look pretty ancient on Sunday. But I happen to think, and I'm of the opinion here, that that was more of an aberration on Sunday than anything else. I just think it was a confluence of the right things at the right time. Miami came through, had nothing to lose. They threw the kitchen sink at the Patriots, and the Patriots fell for it. I don't think the Patriots are near as bad on defense as they played on Sunday. So in that regard, I'm not ready to push the panic button. I think we still need to give, you know, Gerard Mayo and some of the other younger players who are beginning to see more playing time on the defense an opportunity to do just that. Richard Seymour is not ancient. Vince Wilfork is not ancient. Ty Warren is not ancient. Okay, they're not old. The linebacking corps is older, but they've also gotten younger by comparison over a year ago. The secondary is another matter entirely. The secondary is still, I think, ultimately going to be a trouble spot for this team. And that's what we talked about before the season started, that would be the one Achilles heel that this team might have. But that it would be less of an Achilles heel if the front three, and I guess you have to add really, you know, the two outside linebackers who, you know, pass rush as well, and Vrabel and Thomas, okay, include those in the front five of the front seven anyway. You got to include those guys. If they can put an effective pass rush on the opposition, it's going to make that secondary heal up a heck of a lot faster. That's how the game is played. So I'm not ready to push the panic button. I'm ready to preach patience where the defense is concerned. And yet here I am pushing the panic button, advocating a potential change of quarterback where the offense is concerned. Doesn't make much sense, does it? I'm still trying to figure out, okay, why do I think like that? Well, okay, there you go. I've just now talked it through with you. And that's kind of where I am. I'm a little bit, I stand on little different sides of the line of demarcation, if you will, on both issues. A little different. I feel a little differently about the defense than I do about the offense. Do you share those sentiments? Or do you not share those sentiments? Plenty of time for you to respond. Webradio@patriots.com. Let me share a couple of emails here, and then we're going to get into the locker room. Sammy Morris will be up first. This one comes from Joel in Merrimack, New Hampshire, and I apologize if these got read earlier. But at any rate, Joel says, so if Romeo gets fired from Cleveland, does he come back here? Well, first of all, yeah, Cleveland being 0-3, you'd have to say they're one of the negative surprises to start the season in the NFL. Derek Anderson did make a little bit of news today where it wasn't so much Anderson making the news as the Browns making the news, saying that Anderson's still their quarterback. They're not yet ready to say that Brady's going to be their guy in terms of a new quarterback is concerned. In fact, I've got an archived piece of information on that particular issue here. Correct. Romeo Crennel says that he considered benching Anderson for Brady Quinn. But right now, he says he's going to stick with Anderson, and he's not really getting into the ifs, whens, wheres, how long, or anything else like that. That was Crennel's quote today. So Derek Anderson, even though he's certainly been part of the reason that Cleveland has struggled to the 0-3 start, Derek Anderson's still keeping his job. Now, whether or not that directly leads to Romeo Crennel losing his job is another matter entirely. And if he gets fired from Cleveland, does he come back here? Probably not, at least not right away. First of all, you'd have to have, Joel, you'd have to have an opening on your own staff. And I don't know if you've been there, done that, do you want to repeat that? I mean, if you're looking for work and you need a job and there's an opening there, well, then sure, I think you'd have to take a look at it. But here's the thing. If the Patriots decide this year that Dean Pease ultimately is not their guy or that they need to make a change in this particular instance, let's say things continue to go south from here for the defense, well, then you might want to make a change to the coaching staff. But then you got a guy like Dom Capers already on staff who's been an NFL head coach. Because you already have him on staff, wouldn't you give him the first, nod here? And maybe he's out there also looking for another head job, which I would assume Romeo Crennel would be as well. He only comes in if I think both of those guys are no longer with the Patriots. They might ask him to come back. They might. But again, been there, done that. You never know. Interesting question, but again, I find the scenarios, it would take a lot of different things to have happen before that would happen again. Mensa from the Bronx, do you think there are going to be any additions and subtractions either before or after the bye week? Maroney, to me, is proving not to be durable. I can honestly not see how the guy from Dallas was his backup. Do you think you guys think they should be bringing in somebody like Sean Alexander into the fold? Well, first of all, Marion Barber was not Lawrence Maroney's backup at Minnesota. Barber was actually a year or two ahead of Maroney, and they played together in the backfield 1 year at Minnesota, and then Maroney played his last 2 years, I think it was, at Minnesota after Barber had left. So I don't know if you can really say he was the backup. I don't think it was like that. What I'm wondering is how come Minnesota stunk and still does, even with a couple of guys like that in the offensive backfield. I mean, they were pretty good for a while that Maroney was there, but, man, how did they miss on that? Anyway, Maroney not durable? I've said that all along about the guy, and if you've listened to this program at all, you know that I feel that way about Lawrence Maroney, and I'm beginning to say now that I think the Patriots made a big mistake in getting him. He's not going to be the every down elite kind of back that the Patriots thought that they might be drafting when they brought him in, 2-3 years ago. It's not working out. And part of it is because they can't keep him on the field. He's not durable. If they could keep him on the field, we'd get a better idea of whether or not he could be that kind of a back. I don't see it. Do you? Show me where you see it. So should they bring in somebody like Sean Alexander? I don't know that Sean Alexander is the answer because of his previous injury problems. But you know what? If you can get, I still think that they feel like they have enough on the roster right now between Sammy Morris and Lamont Jordan and certainly Kevin Faulk, even without Lawrence Maroney. Now, if another one of those guys goes down, you might see them make a move. Something similar. You might. I could certainly see that. Because then they just let go Kyle Echol yesterday. So your depth is just a little bit less in the last 24 hours because they released Kyle Echol. So if somebody does go down with an injury, you might see that. It's conceivable. I just don't know that it's entirely probable. Well, and speaking of the depth and speaking of the running backs, let's go into the Patriots locker room from earlier today, and let's get some of the thoughts on this bye week and where things stand from Patriots running back Sammy Morris.
I don't think we necessarily feel, you know, that it's, you know, good or bad. It's just, you know, again, that's the schedule we got, and that's, you know, again, we just happened to have lost after the, you know, before the bye week.
How difficult do you think it is, does this team feel it is, to go into the bye week with that loss?
Well, I mean, honestly, like I said, I think it's a bigger deal, you know, to you guys than it is to us. Yeah, I don't think, you know, we were talking about it earlier that, you know, we don't get, you know, too high off a win or too down after a loss. So, like I said, it's a loss, and like I said, it's the cards we're dealt.
So can you talk about moving on? I mean, you know, after this bye week, you got West Coast games coming up, and
yeah.
Whole list of things going on
now. Yeah, well, like I said, it's, you know, we have to. I mean, it's, you know, again, we got a bye week this week, and we got, you know, the 49ers next. So, I mean, you know, that's, you know, that's, you know, like I said, win or loss, you know, it's time to move on.
You move on from that loss. Does it stay in the back of your mind? Do you keep that as motivation, or is it completely gone?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. I think, you know, win or lose, like I said, I mean, you know, I don't think, you know, there'd be any more of a high for the next game after a win than, you know, same thing with, you know, the situation we're in now is, you know, we happen to have lost before the bye week. And like I said, either way, it's behind us.
All the aspects of taking advantage of the bye week, the extra time in film, extra rest, obviously, extra practice time. What do you get the most out of?
I guess maybe a little bit more of the, you know, the rest factor and, you know, it's kind of, you know, maybe get a little more of our legs under us. And like I said, it's just, you know, a little more, you know, study and film time as well.
You know, you look at teams around the league like Indianapolis and things like that. I mean, they haven't really gotten their ground together. You know what I'm saying? It's the beginning of the season.
Sorry.
I mean, how can you judge in one way how a team's going to do from the beginning of the season to the end of the season? I mean, you like to start well, but in some cases a team just doesn't gel.
Well, I mean, like I said, it's you know, it's the NFL. You know, everybody's got you know, great players and a lot of ability and. You know, again, I mean, you look at the Chargers last year. They didn't start as, you know, probably like they wanted to, but they still, you know, made the playoffs and play well and you know, on deep into the playoffs. So, like I said, it's, you know, said you would like to start, you know, start the season a little bit better, but, you know, for whatever reason, if that doesn't happen, then, you know, like I said, you can't, you know, fold your, you know, throw your hand in just, you know, and tap out. So, like I said, that's where, you know, I think there's a lot of teams that still like to be 2-1 going into the bye week. And again, that's where we're at.
Now, that's Sammy Morris from the Patriots locker room earlier today, visiting with members of the Patriots media and giving you his thoughts on where things stand at this point. We'll get to Patriot running back Heath Evans coming up in just a couple of moments. I'm reading through some of the emails that have come through here and some interesting thoughts. Let's see. Let me find out where we have here. Here we go. This one also comes from Mensa in the Bronx, who wrote, again, talked about the quarterback, and he said, about a week ago I wrote in to talk about Bill being stupidly stubborn by signing a proven quarterback, and now we're facing the reality of losing a lot of games. I have in many times said how Matt Castle is not a starting quarterback for this team. It's about time they sign a quarterback. Mensa, I had mentioned again, and I mentioned it today, I mentioned it yesterday, I came out and said I think the Patriots should do something bold, if not brash, on offense, and maybe go out and get a guy like a Jeff Garcia. That maybe now's the time to actually consider doing something like that to give themselves a little bit of a jump start. So along the lines of today's question of the day here on the program, are you panicking or do you preach patience? Panic or patience? That's what I'm asking you guys to answer to me today. And along those lines, I'm kind of, I guess I'd have to say, panic on offense, patience on defense. If you can do both. And I think a couple of other emailers here are realizing the same thing. Philip in Nova Scotia says, if by week 14 or 15, the Patriots know they have no chance at the playoffs, I wonder what kind of football team we will see from them. Well, will they be more experimental with the playbook? I haven't lost hope. I'm just thinking, what if? I think you'll see a lot sooner than week 14 or 15, Philip, if this team struggles and for some unexplained reason goes 3-6, you know, as they get into the second half of the season. I think you'll see more and more people, and I know the PFW guys were talking a little about this earlier today, guys like Kevin O'Connell in particular, get time, legitimate time at quarterback, and some of the younger players that they do have on defense certainly we'll see a lot of time. You'll see, hopefully, Sean Crable, if they can get him off the inactive list, and, you know, more of Gary Guyton and things along those lines. You'll see, hopefully, the, you know, the Wheatleys and the Wilhites in the secondary as well. And why wouldn't you? Because you still have to feel like, even though you're getting these younger guys in there, that you have the nucleus. And we've said this all along, you've got the nucleus here on this team, even still under contract now, to where you can still be competitive for the next 2 or 3 years at the very minimum within the league. And if you bring back a healthy Tom Brady next year, no reason why you can't be right back in the fold in competition and in contention for getting back to the big game. So, yeah, I think they would be experimental with the playbook, but I think more so than being experimental with the playbook, I think they'd be experimental with personnel. Let's say. All right, got to read this one. This one comes from Jacques, who says, James, it's John, but that's okay. I was listening to your broadcast from yesterday. I was unable to listen to it, and I like what you're saying. What I would do if I was Belichick is I would bring in Garcia and cut Castle. There are a lot of things that Garcia could bring to the Patriots. He would humble them so that they all know that no one's job is guaranteed, and they would want to fight harder for their jobs. I think part of the problem is now they know they can say, oh, we're doing bad because we don't have Brady. Well, I don't think I'd go that far, Jacques. What I would do is I'd bring in Garcia, but I would not cut Matt Castle. You know, I realize that neither one of these guys is going to be around next year. This is simply a one and done for both guys. But I don't think I would cut Matt Castle, not unless he asked for his release. Because if Jeff Garcia doesn't do it, you still have to have somebody run the show. Maybe at that time of the season, then it's kind of like, okay, well, we're 3-7 or whatever, and maybe it's time to let Kevin O'Connell get some experience. But, see, I don't think trial by fire, experience by fire like that is necessarily a good thing for a rookie quarterback. I do advocate bringing rookie quarterbacks along slowly in this league. I mean, after all, I mean, he had a good career at San Diego State. Did he have a great career at San Diego State? Subject to conjecture, I think. He also says, here's what Garcia could bring to the line that Castle does not experience. Experience, ability to watch downfield while moving, and change up playing on the spot. From watching Castle on Sunday, I was not impressed with his passing game. He did great running, but the problem is he would have someone open and didn't see it, so he took off running. It's part of what I spoke about in the opening hour. I think he's relying too much on the check off or the check down move as opposed to going to his primary target. And he says, Brady also always saw someone while he was dropping back. The next thing is I think Moss would pick up speed again. I'm not sure if you saw the first 2 weeks, but Moss was not that fast on his feet. And I think knowing that he can get the ball from an experienced quarterback would make him pick up his step again. The next thing I would do is to put some fear in the offensive line. Whether you're going to sign one or not is start talking to some other offensive linemen and teams about their linemen so you can make some of them think their job is not secure. I'd probably do that every day, Jacques. Then he sends this follow-up to that one by saying, I think that Dante Culpepper may be better off than Jeff Garcia. I didn't think of adding that to my email before, but I think with his previous stats on a subpar team like Oakland last year, they may be pretty decent with a lineup like Randy Moss, Willis Welker, and Ben Watson. As for the people who say Brewski's being too old and not strong and fast enough, the whole defense was just having a bad game last week. They will step up. Did everyone see Brewski take Favre down and then get up and hit the running back? He was fast and strong enough that day, but he was having a bad game, like half of the Patriots team this week. All right, let me take this in two separate issues here. Number one, Dante Culpepper, frankly, Jacques, is not the answer. Dante has no movement left. His knees have left him. He couldn't move into the pocket. He can't move up in the pocket. He can't move laterally. Running with the ball, as this Patriots offensive line is unfortunately apparently forcing their quarterbacks to do, that would be a death knell. Dante Culpepper is not the answer. His career has come and gone and left him. He's taken a lot of punishment, and he would not be the guy. You'd have to have somebody at least with still some mobility. And in that regard, Garcia at least still has some mobility, more so than Dante Culpepper, no doubt. Would Randy Moss like to see him? Probably. But I don't think you're going to sacrifice everything to make Randy Moss happy here. As far as Brewski being too old, I agree with you there. I think that was an aberration. You're absolutely right. Taking Favre down and getting up and hitting the running back a couple of weeks ago. Pretty good move. Show that there was some old life left in the old guy, so to speak. Don't take that personally, Teddy. No, I just think it was a horrible, rotten, stinking week. And I prefer to preach patience where the defense is concerned as opposed to panicking where the offense is concerned. All right, let's get back to the issue of the Patriots offense, and let's hear from another Patriots running back inside the locker room today with members of the Patriots media. Here is Heath Evans.
We knew it could happen to us. It just hasn't happened very often. So, you know, good thing is that game's over. We've got a bye week to correct mistakes and, get better. Hopefully with this week off, we'll get that done.
There's no lingering doubts. I mean, you guys are professional.
No, I mean, why would you doubt? We've done something around here for a long, long time. We've been coached the same way. We play the same way. We try to respond the same way. So nothing's going to change. We're going to keep playing hard-nosed football, and hopefully we'll come out on the winning side most of the time. But it's the NFL. We got it handed to us. And you know what? Yeah, is it humbling? Yeah, it is. But we knew that could happen. That's why we practice and prepare, and we try to be coached the way that we're coached. Because this is the NFL. The parity in this league is very minimal. And no one needed a reminder of that. But it happens, so we'll get better and move on.
In your experience, Heath, what has been more beneficial in the bye week? The rest, getting away, looking at more film, having more time, or a combination?
You know, I don't know. Again, I'm the player, and Coach Bill's the coach. And I think when we follow his lead, we always end up on top somehow. So, obviously, we're going to practice hard today and try to get better today, and then we'll see what he has for us tomorrow.
How much of these practices do you expect to be geared towards San Francisco and next week's opponent versus here are some of the fundamentals that we really need to improve on?
You know, I'm not sure. I know there's areas that we struggle in. And so I'm assuming, as every other week, it's going to be where do we fail? What do we do good at? Let's get a mixture of the two and try to get better at what we've been good at and try to get better at what we really struggled at. So it's going to be a Bill Belichick practice. It's going to be hard-nosed. It's going to be physical. It's going to be tough. We'll probably condition hard at the end, and that's the end of it, and we'll get better.
Is it any more difficult having a bye week after a loss like that than it would be any other way?
Well, I mean, we're competitors. You know, I mean, you don't ever want to – it's a – any loss, despite the way this one went down, it's a bitter taste that we haven't had to taste too often around here. So you always want to get back out there and play. But at the same time, you can take a loss like that. You can learn a lot from it and use this extra 7 days to benefit your team. So hopefully we'll respond to the coaching and the corrections, and we'll get better. Yeah. It's the way it's been since I've been here. You know, I've lined up a lot of different places. I've done a lot of different things. Some weeks it's a lot of play time. Some weeks it's not. So my job is to try to play well when I'm out there, and I'm going to continue trying to do that.
That is Heath Evans, Patriots fullback from inside the locker room earlier today here at Gillette Stadium. So we'll get a little bit of a snapshot, listen in to Logan Mankins and his play and his teammates' play on the offensive line coming up in a couple of minutes, as well as defensively from Adalis Thomas before we wrap up the program today. To the issue of quarterbacks, because we talked a little bit about that here today, and some of the emailers have come in and suggested that, and you know, we've advocated for maybe a little bit of a switch in the Patriots' game plan where quarterbacks are concerned as well. There are a couple of teams in the league that are making some moves at quarterback as soon as this week. Now, we just got through mentioning that Derek Anderson is staying put as the starter in Cleveland. Brady Quinn is not yet ready to move in. At least so says Romeo Crennel. But there are a couple of other teams that are making moves at quarterback, and we mentioned this yesterday for the first time, but Mark Bulger is out as the St. Louis Rams starting quarterback. And, of course, the Rams are a future Patriots opponent. In fact, they'll be up next in October for another home game, two home games from now anyway. So the Rams are a future opponent, and we don't know basically who will be quarterback then for the Rams. But Bulger is going to go to the bench, and 38-year-old backup Trent Green is going to start. Now, Bulger is the Rams' highest-paid player. But head coach Scott Linehan, who is certainly as much on the hot seat as any coach in the NFL right now with his team 0-3 this year, and Linehan is 11-24 in his third season as head coach of the Rams. He hasn't turned anything around. So, and even last week, I remember seeing this, Linehan last week was told by Chip Rosenblum, who's the new owner now, that improvements are going to have to be made, or that changes are certainly going to be coming, even though it was his mother's dying wish, Georgia Rosenblum, the former owner of the Rams, that Linehan be given this full year in order to right the ship in St. Louis. Well, apparently, son Chip is not ready to be that patient and is not ready to adhere to his mom's apparent deathbed wishes, and that's no lie. That's exactly, you know, that's what happened. So anyway, Trent Green is in. And I saw where on NFL, I think it was NFL Network, Marshall Faulk feared for Trent Green because of the Rams' overall situation. Of course, Faulk being the former Rams standout at running back himself, he feared for Trent Green's health and safety just because of his issue with concussions that he's gone through over the last few years. You know, the concussion that, of course, knocked him basically what we all thought was into retirement that he suffered when he was a member of the Kansas City Chiefs a couple of years ago. And now that he's ended up back in St. Louis, he's back behind an offensive line that's having its own set of problems. So Green is back in. He's from St. Louis. Remember, it was he and not Kurt Warner who was supposed to be that starting quarterback on the 1999 Rams team that ended up winning the Super Bowl that year. Signed as a free agent after a year in Washington. Good year with Washington the previous season it was. Warner, of course, was thrust into the starting role after Green had a season-ending knee injury that year during the preseason. And then, boof, Kurt Warner's, you know, legend, I guess, was made from here on out. So Green has been one of those guys that's just, you know, pretty talented guy, and I think we've seen that, but he just has not been in the right place at the right time, and who knows if this will be it at age 38. But the Rams are making a move at quarterback, and it is now Bulger out and Green at age 38, who is in. The other move that is being made here is that it looks like the Kansas City Chiefs, of course, the week one opponent for the Patriots, are going to turn to former Patriot backup Damon Heward again. The Chiefs have lost 12 games in a row after their 0-3 start this year. Herm Edwards said earlier yesterday that Damon Heward would probably get the start Sunday when they play the Denver Broncos. Tyler Thigpen, who's been getting a lot of the playing time in Brody Croyle's absence with his shoulder injury, Tyler Thigpen would probably, after getting a start, go back to the bench. Today, the word is that he hasn't definitively changed from that philosophy, although he says his quote is, I'm going to sleep on it a little bit more. So it looks as if Damon Heward could be back in at quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs, and Tyler Thigpen will go back to the bench. So, you know, for a couple of teams that are 0-3, clearly they're pushing any button they can in an effort to try to get things back on the right track, or at least get things back to some semblance of respectability, simply because they're 0-3, and they've got to do something to shake it up. I don't think the Patriots are quite there yet in an overall picture. Again, I'll kind of reiterate here where I think they could make a move that would be conceived as a panic button type of move on offense if they brought somebody else in at this stage of the game. I think patience is what needs to be preached here on the defensive side of the ball, even in light of this completely abysmal performance we all witnessed on Sunday against the Dolphins. And that's been our question of the day. Still a couple of minutes left for you to get your thoughts in on that. Panic or patience? Which are you preaching for this Patriots football team and why? Webradio@patriots.com. That's the email address. Here's one from William who says, here's John, why I'm not panicking. Number one, they are 2-1. They're not 0-3. Based on, I guess, some of the 0-3 stories that I just told here. Number two, it is week number three. Actually, it's week four, but who's counting? And number three, it was the Dolphins. Everything weird is the Dolphins. I don't just mean the really old stuff like losing to Shula's perfect Dolphins in 72. I mean the Patriots are awesome and the Dolphins suck, yet they beat the Patriots. I think I get the general gist of what you're saying. The Dolphins don't appear to be as good as the Patriots, and yet they won the game. So, yeah, there is truly some weirdness going on here, if I am to take your verbiage as I think I'm supposed to take it here, William. But thanks for the email. Yeah, it's just some different stuff going on that you're not really prepared for that I think everybody now is going to have to prepare themselves for. Patriots physically, the rest of us probably mentally. And once we realize that it's not the same old AFC, and certainly not the same old AFC East that the Patriots have been, you know, pounding into submission the last few years, once we realize that it's not that way any longer, then maybe it'd be easier for all of us to you know, come to grips with what's going on here. All right, let's go back inside the Patriots locker room and see if a guy like Logan Mankins can come to grips with, you know, the realities of this week and where he thinks things could turn from here. Here's Logan Mankins with the Patriots media inside the locker room.
It's going. It's not as good as we want. I don't think it ever is. We're trying to get more consistent on the line right now and give Matt a little more time. We could help Matt out a lot if we could block a little bit longer for him.
Do you think that there's cohesion there now? I mean, didn't have everyone together throughout the preseason.
Yeah, I think we have plenty of cohesion. It's just I don't think we're holding up quite as long as we need to. There's on certain plays we're getting beat and they're getting a mess. So if we could give them a little more time, that would help.
Different, I mean, different blocking from one quarterback to another, no matter who it is.
No, we try to control the guy, keep him controlled, but they get loose sometimes.
Does this week help more in terms of looking at film, having more time to look at film, or having more practice time?
Both. We get an extra week to watch the Niners and see what they do and maybe pick up on some stuff. And it helps us work on stuff that we feel that we need to work on. That in a normal week, it's a shorter week, so you don't get to do that kind of stuff. So it helps in both ways.
Bill inside was talking about this as a chance to take a step back. When you hear those words, what does that mean to you?
Take a step back?
Yeah, take a step back and kind of look at where we are.
Yeah, I guess. Take a step back, see what we've been doing wrong, what we think we could improve on and work on it these next few days.
One of those areas, trying to score touchdowns in the red zone as opposed to something.
Yeah, that would make the outcomes of games a lot different if we'd score some touchdowns instead of field goals. When you get down there, it's so important to score a touchdown instead of just 3 points, and we really need to improve on that. We haven't done a very good job of that.
He's done 3 weeks in. How's he kind of, you know, fit into this offensive
line? Billy's doing a great job. We've always had confidence in Billy. He's subbed in the last few years when people have went down, and he stepped right in this year and is doing a very good job.
Will you be looking forward to a rare opportunity to play a game in your near, close to your hometown?
Yeah, I am going pretty close to home. I'll have a lot of friends and family out there, and it'll be nice to see everyone.
Just a Logan Mankins game then?
Nah, I don't know. There'll be a lot of people there, but there's a lot. The game's a lot bigger than me.
The coaches always tell you, you know, you can lose any game or every game is tough. But when you actually see it happen to you, as dominant as Miami was, does that make much more of an impression than just hearing it from the coaches? You can feel it more.
Yeah, we know when we get our butts kicked, and that's what happened. We got beat on both sides, and it wasn't very pretty. And we're all trying to. We watched the film, and everyone felt really bad about it. We're trying to get over that and work on the stuff that we did bad in that game.
Is it hard to get past that? You lose like that and then see the film? I mean, and now you have to wait 2 weeks to play a game?
No. Everyone's professionals. We know it's going to happen. We've kicked the hell out of people like that, and they've had to get over it. So we know it's going to happen sooner or later. The other teams, they're getting paid, and they're trying their hardest too. So it happens.
Logan Mankins, Patriots offensive guard, and his thoughts heading into the bye week this week and how the Patriots got to put some things behind them and move on and pay attention towards San Francisco next week. Let's take in another quick timeout here before we wrap up the program. We'll come back on the other side and hear from Adalys Thomas inside the Patriots locker room. I'm also going to tell you that there's another quarterback that you might not have considered that is on the market now and available.
Yeah.
In case the Patriots are looking. No,
yeah.
It's not Joe Namath. No, it's definitely not him. It's not Susie Colbert either, but we'll talk about that. I'll mention that to you. And, oh, yeah, tomorrow's Qdoba Day, right? Can't wait for that. We'll talk about that as well. Coming up inside the playbook.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Well, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
tailgate parties,
soccer games,
birthday parties,
baby shower
for my son's graduation party.
It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh,
affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com.
Patriot Place, New England's first and only super regional lifestyle and entertainment center, is now open right next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts. The home of the New England Patriots and the New England Revolution is now the home of New England's most exciting entertainment and shopping destination, featuring Circuit City, Bed Bath & Beyond, Christmas tree shops, Off-Broadway shoes, Staples, and New England's first Bass Pro Shops. Patriot Place has something for your shopping needs. And coming soon to Patriot Place is the first CBS Scene restaurant in Boston. A four-star hotel, showcase live entertainment venue, and the long-awaited hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Patriot Place will soon be the home to more than 70 shopping, entertainment, and dining experiences unlike any other in New England. Visit patriot-place.com for more information and enter the grand opening sweepstakes for the opportunity to win a $10,000 Visa gift card for a Patriot Place shopping spree. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day. At Patriot Place, everyone wins.
This is former quarterback Steve Grogan
and former linebacker Steve Nelson.
We want to tell you about the game with the greats.
Are you one of those old diehard fans who remembers our playing days, like the 1985 Super Bowl or the snowplow kick?
Maybe you just want to meet the newest members of the Patriot Hall of Fame, like Ben Coates or my good friend Stanley Morgan.
And Andre Tippett, one of my linebacking brothers. He'll be there too.
You think he'll bring his gold jacket with him?
I hope so. I can't wait to see it on him.
If you're a big-time fan, you won't want to miss the Game with the Greats. It's happening on October 5th at Gillette Stadium when the current Patriots are away at San Francisco.
Get your tickets now at patriots.com/alumni.
Hey, that's pretty good, huh, Steve?
Yeah, we still got it. We should call ESPN. We could be the next Mike and Mike.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Well, we're on the home stretch for Patriots Playbook on a Wednesday, the bye week Wednesday as it is. I'm John Rook. Tomorrow's program, same Pat's time, same Pat's channel, will feature
Eric's... What do I love at
Qdoba? Yeah, well, it features Qdoba. Yeah, baby. Can't wait. The Qdoba question of the day is what's going on for PFW. Gary, you want to, because I'm not sure the exact particulars where that's concerned, you want to remind people what they've got to do?
At some point... during tomorrow's show, Fred is going to ask for someone to call in to answer the Qdoba question of the day.
Okay.
Which will be a question based on today's show or yesterday's show.
All right.
So someone has to call in. They're going to have to answer the question live on the air, kind of like Regis and Kelly. Hopefully they get it wrong. It'll be very funny.
But if they get it right, then they win a Qdoba party platter for 20 people.
Yeah,
or whatever.
If they get it right, they win a Qdoba hot taco bar for 20.
Awesome. All right, so that'll be during PFW in progress tomorrow. But the most exciting thing that, you know, we're going to add to the equation tomorrow is the fact that I'm looking forward to the burrito that gets left for me in the studio tomorrow.
No, we're actually getting that taco bar for 20.
Nice. Really? Oh, that's outstanding. I guess I better get there early.
So you can make your own.
Okay. So I guess, like I said, I better get there early because, you know, behind, you know, Andy and Fred and...
Well, it's a taco bar for 20. We have Fred, Paul, Andy, Eric, and Mike, so we should have a little left over by the time
we get
there.
A little, but, you know, but there's you, there's Jason, there's, you know, there's Mini Gary, there's, you know, I mean, come on, right? Everybody will be in there once they smell the food come through. Yeah, two gender. You know, hey, it'll all be there. So, anyway, that's going to be tomorrow, and if you want a chance to win the taco bar for 20, then by all means, make sure you tune in, and we'll have some fun with that tomorrow. All right, as far as personnel decisions are concerned. And by the way, tomorrow, in addition to, you know, Eric Scalavino from PFW, who will be joining us as he does on Thursdays, Russell Baxter.
Yoo-hoo! Baxter!
Yes, sir. Russell Baxter, the NFL research coordinator for ESPN's Family of Networks, will join us as he does each and every Thursday on the program as well. And since there's no Patriots game to talk about, we'll spend a lot of time, not so much time on last week's game with Miami, but we'll spend a lot of time looking at week four around the NFL and certainly the teams that affect the Patriots in the AFC East and upcoming Patriots opponents. So that's what we'll spend some time with Russell here inside the playbook on tomorrow's show. Now, as far as that personnel move I was talking about and potential players that might be available, there's another quarterback available in the NFL this day. And another potential possibility for the Patriots if they decide they want to go this route. No, Jeff Garcia did not get cut by the Tampa Bay Bucs, although he has been relegated to the third string role in Tampa. And I'm not sure why they're holding on to him, probably out of spite more than anything else, based on what I've read and heard. But today the Saints released quarterback Joey Harrington. And they did this only 5 days after signing him. I don't know what that means. I don't know if they mean if it means that, hey, Joey's just not a fit for us, or Joey, we got at you out of you what we wanted, or Joey, you got no prayer of playing here. I don't know what it means. But 5 days after signing him, the Saints have let him go. So Joey Harrington is also, potentially anyway, an available commodity on the market, such as it is. And by the way, the Saints signed tight end Sean Ryan, formerly of Boston College, to compensate for the loss of Jeremy Shockey to his sports hernia. So those are some moves that the New Orleans Saints made today. The story out of Saints camp says that Harrington could be brought back to New Orleans later in the year, but they said that they did not want to use a roster spot on a third-string quarterback in the short term because they're short-handed at other positions, namely tight end. So that's the scoop. By the way, in addition to losing Shockey for 3 to 6 weeks, guard Jamar Nesbitt has been suspended by the league for violating the policy on anabolic steroids and related substances. So he's been suspended for 4 games. And the Saints this week re-signed Matt Lair, an offensive lineman, to make up for the loss of Nesbitt because of suspension. So a lot of moves going on where the New Orleans Saints are concerned. But Joey Harrington is back out on the open market. So if you're interested, Patriot fans, you might not be. But anyway, there's a name for you. Let's get to the Patriots locker room once again and go to the defensive side of the ball because that was, of course, I think the real maligned area on Sunday against the Dolphins, and find out what Adalis Thomas thinks about not only recovering from Sunday, but his off-week, bye-week thoughts as well. Here's Adalis Thomas with members of the Patriots media.
Adalis, how important is this bye-week to you, the defense, in trying to assess where you are?
It is. We don't have nothing to do with when it is, and so it came at this time, and so we're dealing with it.
How helpful are bye weeks, though, in terms of just being able to take a step back, like Bill said?
It's good. You know, I guess it just really depends. You know, it's try to get healthy, get your feet back on it, but it's the beginning of the season, so it's not like it's week 10 or anything like that. So you get a chance to step back from it, evaluate yourself, and move forward. That was easy.
Can you talk about the pass rush? Is that something that you guys are working on over the next 2 weeks, just trying to get more pressure on the quarterback or find ways to do that?
Yeah, to ask Bill, I don't have the practice schedule. You ask Bill what we're working on. I'm pretty sure y'all had a chance to ask him that too. So whatever he told y'all, that's what it is.
What was most disappointing about the loss and the way that it happened?
We're talking about San Francisco. We're not talking about last week. Last week is done. It's over with. Just like you do with a win, you do the same thing with a loss. After Monday, you deal with it, and it's done.
Is that
Bayless, how much of a benefit is it to have a team like St. Francis, who you haven't seen in a long while, to have some extra time to not only work on yourselves, but to work on them too?
Well, it is. It is. It is beneficial, you know, because you don't play San Francisco twice, and you don't see them as much. So you give you an extra week to work on some of the things that they do. They're very talented, good running back, good quarterback, scoring a lot of points. And so we definitely have our challenge cut out. And so I think that week will be used very wisely.
That's Adalys Thomas. I'm not sure what the other stuff was, but that's Adalys Thomas. It's at the Patriots locker room as we wrap up playbook for Wednesday. I want to leave you with this particular tidbit from an AFC East blog. Gentleman's name is Tim Graham, who writes for ESPN.com, and I thought it kind of interesting. He says, Bill Belichick's library is believed to contain the world's third largest collection of football books behind only the Library of Congress and the Pro Football Hall of Fame. His collection of more than 800 titles is housed at the U.S. Naval Academy in Annapolis, where Belichick's father, of course, coached for 33 years. Well, as Patriots use their bye week to regroup from Sunday's incredible loss to Miami, this might be the perfect occasion for Belichick to get away and center himself. On a shelf somewhere in Ricketts Hall, he likely will find Winning Single Wing Football, a simplified guide for the football coach. It was written by Dr. Ken Kuffel, who played for Princeton in the 1940s. I believe it's Kuffel. It could be Kuffel. It's K-E-U-F-F-E-L. We'll say Kuffel. At the top of the book's cover is a testimonial. The principles of single wing football are enduring, and they're all covered by Ken Kuffel. Every coach in football can profit by reading this book.
Bill Belichick. I can't wait.
Yeah. Bill Belichick gave that testimonial on that book on single wing football. And Tim Graham goes on to say, had he reacquainted.
I never said that.
Well, maybe not. Hold on just a second, Bill. Had he reacquainted himself with Kuffel's book while preparing for the Dolphins, Belichick might have gleaned a tip or two on how to neutralize an unusual offense that gave the Patriots fits.
It's so ridiculous.
At least by NFL standards, there was nothing by the book about Miami's fascinating victory Sunday.
What do you want me to tell you?
Stadium. I don't know. There's nothing you could tell me, nor anybody else, Coach.
Unexcused. Except,
yeah, well, it's true, except for it is what it is. That's all it is. It is what it is.
It is what it is.
Thank you. Okay, see, there you go. All right, that wraps up for the playbook on a Wednesday. Again, don't miss out tomorrow. Eric Scalavino join us in the opening hour from PFW, and in hour number two, Russell Baxter from ESPN, NFL Research Coordinator, will run down week four around the NFL, and anything else new coming out of Patriots camp, well, you know, we'll have it right here inside the playbook.